Welcome to today's insight session. My name is Colette Reid, for those of you who don't know me, and I'll be chairing the session today on reinsurance, which I'm sure is a very topical topic and of interest to many of us for various reasons, whether you work for a reinsurer or not. To talk to us today about reinsurance, we have Nicole Marshall. So Nicole is head of marketing at SCOR, with 10 years' experience in the financial services industry. Her current role includes new business development, strategy and client relationship management for SCOR's Australian operations. She has extensive pricing and product development experience from her previous roles, which included EY and Munich Re. So I'm sure you'll all join me in making Nicole feel welcome and talk to us today about reinsurance.
Thank you, Colette. So I don't know about any of you, but whenever I'm out introducing myself to someone, whether it be at a pub, basketball court, anywhere, and I say I'm an actuary, I always get some really weird looks, confused looks. People think it's something to do with beekeeping, don't know how that happens. But after a while explaining myself, then ask me, where do I work? Say SCOR reinsurance. Again, more confused, blank looks. And then thinking to myself, why do I even bother explaining what I do? It would be much easier to say I'm a simple accountant or something. Hope you know accountants in the room. So just go to say that it's quite an unusual concept for reinsurance to the general public. And from some of the conversations I've had out in the market as well, a lot of people who work at insurers or consulting firms who don't necessarily talk to reinsurers on a day-to-day basis seem to think it's a bit of a confusing topic or an unknown topic as well. What I'm here to do today is to welcome you to the world of reinsurance, explain a bit about what it's all about, why reinsurance exists, some of the typical structures you see in the Australian market, why clients of ours actually use reinsurance, and to give you a bit of an insight into what working at a reinsurance company is actually like on a day-to-day basis. Can you all hear me? I'm falling you, Colette, sorry. Alright. So obviously the insurance market is centred around your end client. In a retail space, this is your policyholder. In a group space, these are your members. They have a need for insurance. Sometimes they don't know they have that need, but that's a different story entirely. So the direct insurers provide a service to those customers. They have distribution channels that the policyholders and members can utilise to understand about insurers, talk to advisors, understand how to fulfil those needs. They have admin systems to manage that book of business and do a lot of marketing to those clients. At the same time, they may not want to have all that insurance risk sitting on their books. Maybe for various reasons, perhaps they want to have a more diversified book of business. So they will transfer some of those risks to a reinsurer. That's where we come in, obviously. We take sort of smaller bits, perhaps, of different books of business, different industry funds, different retail clients, and really have some diversification. That happens in the local space, in the Australian market, but most of the reinsurers are actually global players. So you can diversify across different geographies, different countries, different populations. At the same time as that, a lot of reinsurers provide services to our clients. So it's around providing that pricing and product expertise, claims underwriting support, and other various services. Something that probably isn't quite as well known around the industry is that reinsurers often also reinsure their business. That's to our retrocessionaires. It could be internal retro. Most reinsurers will send some of their business off to our head office, for example. Again, that diversification factor of bringing in different bits of business from different markets. You could also utilise external retrocessionaires as well. Same sorts of reasons. Going off to Lloyd's markets, perhaps, in the London business, just really getting a diversified book of business. And obviously, with a diversified book of business, you get some sorts of capital arbitrage as well. Not everything's going to go wrong all at once, we hope. So you can get some support that way. The benefits of reinsurance, we've sort of talked through it, but it's really around providing that protection. Obviously, the point of insurance and how it all works is on that law of large numbers. nothing's going to go badly at once. You pull your different bits of risk, and that's how insurers work. And reinsurers are sort of the prime example of that at the next level, pulling those risks together. And then there's the service side of things as well, and the reducing price side of things. So reinsurers help set assumptions. They help through the pricing work. Anyone who's involved in group pricing in the current climate knows that your range of prices can be quite large at the moment. So generally, if you get an insurer and a reinsurer agreeing on the one price, or agreeing even close on the one price, that gives you a lot more confidence in that you've got the pricing right. And that obviously flows through to your end policyholders and members in terms of having sustainable product offering. The capital efficiency side of things as well, all driven by that diversification. The cost of capital for a reinsurer is generally cheaper than for an insurer, so that helps to your end customer as well, having a cheaper price of insurance. Plus there's the profit volatility piece. A lot of the business that is reinsured tends to be the largest sums insured, obviously that helps with the profit volatility of the insurer. They're not going to get exposed to those large risks. Even when you're looking at a quota share sort of structure for reinsurance, you're sharing the risks with the insurer. So there's an idea of managing your profit volatility there as well. Types of reinsurance I'll touch on. Some of these may be familiar to you, some of them not so much. Proportional reinsurance is really the key and the biggest piece of business in the Australian market. That's where we're talking around your quota shares, so a simple 50-50 perhaps on an industry fund, sometimes different structures, and also your surplus reinsurance. Surplus tends to be a bit more in the retail space, perhaps in the group space. That's where the life insurer will take all the cover up to, say, $1 million per life, and then the reinsurer takes the excess above that. Proportional is proportional basically because premiums and claims are shared in the same proportion. You get 50% of the premiums and pay 50% of the claims. The reasons why proportional reinsurance tends to be used is partly around capacity. An insurer may not have the risk appetite to take a whole big share of it itself, around the diversification factor, so that'll give them a better way to a reinsurer. Also around volatility management, as I've talked to, sharing the hopeful wins and potential losses in a book of business, and also around the reinsurance services. A quota share kind of structure is very much an aligned structure between an insurer and a reinsurer. And a lot of those structures, you know, the reinsurer works with the insurer on a day-to-day basis through your claims underwriting support, through managing a portfolio, your experience analysis and whatnot. Excess of loss is probably fairly rare in the Australian market. You do see a bit more of this overseas, but it's a non-proportional reinsurance structure. So really the reinsurer will take all the losses above a particular level. So if in a particular portfolio there's 100 million of claims, the insurer might take the first 100 million and the reinsurer takes the rest over that. It's non-proportional because your premiums aren't proportional to your claims. Most years you'll get some premium and hopefully pay no claims. Every so often there'll be a disastrous year and the reinsurer has a lot of claims to pay. This sort of structure is really around managing that volatility, managing that worst case scenario. If you know you're running to another year example and you've got a really poor year, then your reinsurer comes out and helps with those losses. Catastrophe reinsurance as well. This is reinsurance cover for a sort of specific scenario. Probably a sort of example of that in the Australian market is around group insurance. When you're looking at a particular corporate fund, say for example, they've got all their members in a particular building in the CBD, or they've got all their members working on an offshore rig in a mine somewhere. It's around that catastrophe cover. What if something does happen? You've got a lot of lives who are exposed to that on that offshore oil rig, and providing the support for that. It tends to be, for example, if there are, say, more than five people who are injured or die in a particular incident, that's when the reinsurance cover kicks in. Again, probably most of the local reinsurers in the market don't provide a lot of this support because it's something that obviously helps a lot from diversification around the world. You shouldn't have an oil rig disaster happening in Australia at the same time as somewhere else overseas. So it's all of that pooling aspect with cat cover. And again, the reasons why this is used is fairly self-explanatory and obvious around managing that volatility, managing that worst-case scenario, and sharing those risks and pooling them at a high level around the globe. The financial reinsurance I'll just touch on as well. There are probably two sorts of types of financial reinsurance. The traditional financial reinsurance, which is really around capital relief without necessarily any transfer of risk. Obviously, that's very difficult to do in the Australian market. Lots of APRA regulations around that. So that's something that's more done on an overseas basis. Some of the other markets, particularly the Asian markets, don't have those sorts of regulations, and it's much more of a common methodology to help get capital into a life insurer. The other way it's done is with transfer of risk, and it also provides capital relief. It's probably not financial reinsurance per se, but it's around getting capital support to a life insurer, either because they want to use that capital elsewhere in their business, or they want to give a dividend back to their parents, and there have been a few examples around that in the marketplace. Just to give you a few sort of stats and insights on the global reinsurance market. So there are around 200 companies globally who provide life reinsurance support. And it's around $100 billion of annual written premium. So we're talking about pretty large numbers here. Obviously, those written premiums have to be invested somewhere. So the reinsurance market does actually contribute a lot to investing in, you know, stock market, bonds, and providing support for the rest of the economic industry. Of those 200 companies, it's actually quite a concentrated market. You can see in the graph down there that almost 60% of those premiums and the business comes from three reinsurers. Pretty staggering and pretty concentrated, and the rest of it, up to 97% or so, is with the top 10 global reinsurers. So it's obviously a tough market to get into. There are a number of reasons why that's the case. Obviously, when we're talking about insurance and reinsurance, it's all around that, you know, law of large numbers and getting economies of scope and scale in there. Reinsurance isn't something you can do on a small scale. You just don't get the diversification and the pooling of risks. There are obviously some quite strong capital requirements being a reinsurer as well. So that makes it another sort of barrier to entry, if you want to say that. Regulatory constraints come into it. Obviously, in the Australian market, to write either life insurance or reinsurance business, you have to be APRA regulated to have a local life licence. So that's another constraint. Other marketplaces have similar sorts of constraints as well. Interestingly enough, some of the other markets, say for example in India, they provide a lot of benefits and a lot of incentives to their own actual local life reinsurers, making it a lot more difficult for the actual global reinsurers to get a foothold in those markets. So with all of this, there haven't actually been any successful new global entrants into the reinsurance market in the last 20 years. Of those 200 companies, a lot of them are local reinsurance companies. Particularly some of the Asian markets and the European markets, you tend to get, you know, one reinsurer or a couple of reinsurers in the specific country. They're really just focused on that one country and not on a global scale. Again, looking at sort of the regions and the reinsurance market globally, North America, so US and Canada, has got a bulk of it. This is an in-force graph, so the reason why North America is pretty large, obviously, is a big population and a very well-developed insurance market and population. They know the need for insurance. They've had it around for a long time. It's very well-developed. So there's a big market over there. Europe in the green is probably the second biggest market at the moment. And again, that's been sort of very traditional. You know, the UK, Scotland, Ireland, where a lot of the actuaries came from in the birth of the profession. So insurance has been around for a long time there. Obviously, a lot of the global life reinsurers have got head offices over in Europe as well. So there's a very well-developed marketplace over there. Asia-Pac coming out, sort of the newer player and the new kid on the block. Australia is probably a bulk of that, and we've got quite a developed reinsurance and insurance industry. You know, I've learned a lot from our UK counterparts, South Africa counterparts as well. But the rest of Asia is still quite developed, still quite underdeveloped and still working through that. They write a lot of traditional products over there still, your whole of life types of products. They also write a lot of medical expense kind of products, trauma products, all with fairly low sums insured. So with the big population over there, there's a lot of opportunity for reinsurers and insurers in that space. And it probably will be the largest growth engine for the next few years at least, until Latin America, the other sort of big populations come through, start to progress. Part of the reason why the Australian market is such a large contributor, and whilst these stats are only in force, if you actually look at new business being written, Australia is really quite big and really outweighs our actual population size. And a lot of that obviously is to do with group insurance. Group insurance is a wonderful thing in that it gives a lot of members basic default cover. The penetration of insurance in this country is huge. And the fact that that's being retended on average every 2 to 3 years makes for anyone in this room who does group pricing, keeps you very busy, keeps us all very busy, and provides a lot of opportunity. There's lots of new business coming through, and it's quite a big opportunity for offshore and outside reinsurers to come in and look at those opportunities. So here we've got a bit more on the local market. We've got the names there of the 7 local life reinsurers. Hopefully they're all familiar to you, or some of them are familiar to you at least. And some of them have been here for longer than others, but they all have different strategies in terms of the business that they look to write and the clients that they work with in this market. An interesting stat is only around 20% of Australian life insurance business is actually reinsured. That's partly because of some of the older whole-of-life sorts of businesses haven't been particularly reinsured. It's also partly in the retail space. A lot of business at the lower sums insured isn't necessarily reinsured either. But it's still a big market. We've got around 280 million of new individual business being written and reinsured each year, quite a staggering number. And the group insurance market is around 2.5 billion, group reinsurance market. So that's being retendered every 2 or 3 years. So obviously an exciting opportunity for those in the reinsurance space. Yeah, I quite like this little slide here. It's talking about the different versions of reinsurance. We've got the sort of simple burger there, the commodity reinsurance offering. That certainly has been offering in the past and in some markets still. It's around looking for a cheap price. Insurers who look to get a reinsurer on board offload some of that risk for a cheap price. On the other side, you've got a more complex product. You've got a nice fancy meal. You've got the services that are being offered along with the reinsurance support there. And you've got an insurer who's looking for more of a long-term partnership with their reinsurer. From my point of view, what's happened in the Australian market more recently is that we've sort of moved a bit from that plain commodity burger to the more complex reinsurance offering in the nice fancy meal there. And that's sort of been driven by what's happened in the group insurance space. We've all seen the large losses that have happened in the market, particularly for the reinsurers. And that's obviously had a flow-on effect to the end prices for consumers. That's not a particularly sustainable place to be in. And if you do have a more of a longer-term partnership with your reinsurer, insurers and reinsurers working together, understanding the experience earlier on, having an aligned approach, that should all help come through and make for a more sustainable offering. We've all seen a bit of a dry up in capacity in the last couple of years in the reinsurance space, and that is because, people have been a bit more nervous around group insurance particularly. But working through with an insurer and reinsurer closely, sharing information, having an aligned approach should help to hopefully avoid that. And as well, hopefully all learn from the mistakes that happened in the last couple of years. Um, just to go through some of the actual needs of reinsurance. Obviously that slide before pointed to sort of two different types of reinsurance, but when you delve down underneath that, there's obviously a lot more going on. We've talked some of this already around the earnings volatility management, and that's really just about sharing the risk with the client, insurer and reinsurer working together, hopefully winning together, but also diversifying the pool, and if there are losses, then the reinsurer takes on part of that. We've got the unknown risks part of it, and that's probably quite important at the moment as the industry does go through change. As it has been a bit of nervousness and uncertainty on the group reinsurance and insurance side. You know, we've seen a lot of deterioration, trends have been going the wrong direction, so there is nervousness around that. And so by working closely with a reinsurer and insurer together, you can hopefully land at a price that you both agree on, and it gives that the insurer that sort of second set of eyes over a piece of pricing. Obviously, it helps avoid any sort of mispricing risks, and plus there's the ongoing sort of management as well. In the retail space, you've got product upgrades happening every so often, which the reinsurer helps out with. On the product development side, again, you know, the reinsurer tends to have ideas and see other things that have happened overseas, can help bring those back to the Australian market, and, you know, work quite closely with an insurer in sharing what may or may not work, looking at, you know, changes to TPD definitions and how they're actually priced and what the impacts of those can be. Plus there's the risk management side as well, and that, you know, sharing those risks obviously helps the diversification. You can help, you know, reinsurers can help work through economic risks with a particular, you know, corporate or industry fund. You know, if you're looking at a particular mining site, for example, doing the research, understanding, you know, how long that mine's going to stay around, whether it's near the end of its life cycle, and just understanding the actual risks a bit more by putting, you know, two heads together. Two heads are always better than one, I say. Got the services side of things, which is obviously really important, and I think more so from a retail perspective than a group perspective. But still also equally important in group. You've got underwriting and claims referrals. The way an insurer sort of sets up with a reinsurer, you normally have an authority limit. So under that, the insurer can underwrite various cases that come through and assess the claims that come through. The reinsurer would normally audit that over time to obviously do the checks so that from the reinsurer's point of view, everything's happening as expected, there's no rogue underwriter in there letting a lot of cases through or anything. But it also provides, you know, feedback to the insurer around how they compare to a market best practice, whether they need to do anything different, what's happening on the global side of things, and whether there's any insights there that can come back to how you're doing your underwriting locally. There's various bits of training that happen that a reinsurer will typically provide to insurers as well. That can be around a whole various aspects of things. It can be around, you know, very technical sort of pricing training. How do you do loss ratios, credibility models, what sort of credibility models are used in the industry or overseas, and bringing those back. It can be more on the sort of medical side of things, understanding trends in cancer research and development, understanding what's happening in overseas markets in terms of product changes and a whole variety of things. A lot of insurers tend to like bringing some of their reinsurers to help with training of new staff on the underwriting and claims side as well, for example. There's the knowledge sharing side of things. You know, whilst Australia is quite a developed market, there are always things that we can learn from overseas as well, and from the rest of the market. You know, insurers sometimes obviously quite focused on their own business, so it can be good to get ideas of what's happening elsewhere out in the market. I've sort of talked to the process reviews and audits already a bit, but it's really about understanding how you do compare to market, whether there are any gaps. These are quite useful for insurers in doing, you know, KPIs, for example, for their underwriting claims, pricing, admin teams. Reinsurers obviously have to do admin audits as well, just to check that we're actually getting the right premiums and paying the right claims. And you know, these sorts of audits are also quite useful for insurers' boards to know that everything's in order and get that sort of independent view that the functions are performing as they should be. And CMO, Chief Medical Officers, the support that the reinsurers provide from their CMOs, partly around the underwriting and claim sides, and in particular difficult cases that are out there that provide, you know, medical information on, and in an insurance context as well. And partly it's around, you know, trauma definitions, making sure that that actually makes sense, can be measured out there when a condition happens, and making sure that they sort of stand up to any media scrutiny as it happened more recently. And capital management being the other key use of reinsurance. That's around, you know, whether the insurer needs that extra capital, wants to release some capital by sending a share of the risk off to the reinsurer. And obviously, we've already discussed that the more diversified a reinsurer can get their book, the cheaper the cost of capital will be for them. The other aspect to the capital side is around the new business strain as well. Obviously, for an insurer to write some business, say particularly on the retail side, it's quite expensive. You've got to pay some commissions to advisors, you've got to potentially underwrite them, you've got to do a whole lot of marketing to get someone interested in the insurance in the first place. So the reinsurer typically share a portion of those costs with an insurer. They'll do that through an upfront commission. And commonly in the marketplace, a reinsurer will actually pay 100% of their premiums as upfront commissions to insurers, meaning that we actually get no premium that first year, and hopefully make up for it in future years as long as that's to stay sufficiently low. So reinsurance in Australia. On the group side, we do typically see a lot of quota shares. They can range between 10 to 50% in general, and the reason that does vary depends a lot on the life insurer and what their, you know, use for reinsurance is, what their appetite for retaining that risk themselves is. You'll normally get some sort of surplus element as well above that. So, you know, a typical group industry fund structure, for example, might be insurer and reinsurer share at 50% each. Then for any large claims above $1 million, the reinsurer might take all of that, for example. Reinsurance tends to be more on a facultative basis for your larger risks out there, like industry funds. That means the insurer looks to reinsure something just on a one-off basis. Or your big industry funds, your, you know, Australian Supers, your REST, your CBASs, which hopefully are familiar to all of you, it's typically done on that facultative basis where the insurer goes and talks to a particular reinsurer to reinsure just that one fund. On the other side of that, you get automatic treaty reinsurance, which, as it sounds like, it's automatic. So you might have one treaty that covers, for example, one insurer's entire corporate book. The way that would operate is normally a reinsurer would say, for particular corporate schemes under a certain level of annual premium, the insurer would go away and quote on it as they sort of see fit, following a sort of approved and discussed sort of pricing methodology and process. And so the insurer would just go away and quote that themselves. But then for your bigger risks or more unusual risks, they'd probably have to refer that to a reinsurer. Obviously, with the amount of quoting that can go on sometimes in the corporate space, it just doesn't make sense to put each one out separately to a reinsurer. And also, it does help that diversification factor as well, having a whole lot of corporates all together under the one treaty. On the retail side, it works a little bit differently. Again, you know, surplus arrangements tend to be quite typical on the lump sum side for retail. That's, as we were sort of saying before, over $1 million goes to the reinsurer. However, on the income protection IP side, you tend to get a bit more of a mix between the quota shares and the surpluses. Again, driven by different insurers having different appetites and different needs for the reinsurance. Most risks on the reinsurance retail side do come under an automatic treaty. All your sort of smaller sums insured will come under these treaties, even up to sort of $10, $20 million limits in some cases. And again, it's more about that pooling factor, keeping it nice and simple and easy. However, for your large cases, and we're talking, you know, quite large, 60 million sorts of numbers, which you do occasionally get for mortality business in Australia, they can sometimes be facultatively reinsured. Now, it's quite an interesting and scary graph if you're a reinsurer in the room. We've all obviously seen and been aware of some of the losses that have happened over the last couple of years, particularly on, you know, the group TPD disability space, and also on the retail IP space as well. However, this graph shows that it's still not quite there for us yet. Life's still tough as a reinsurer. This is taken from the most recent APRA statistics. It shows your profit after tax as a percentage of revenue. You can see that the total market is making a 9% or so margin, not amazing, but at least they're making money. The reinsurers, however, are faring not as well out of that and are only about a 1% margin. Now, a number of reasons why this is happening, potential misalignment sometimes between the insurers and reinsurers, potentially reinsurers not being as disciplined as they should be, potential just bad luck as well. Maybe we haven't quite figured out, gotten to the bottom of the cycle yet. But just going to show that life is quite tough as a reinsurer, and it's a bit of work for us to go still, I think. So what's life like working at a reinsurer? Despite what some might actually think, we're not always out having nice long lunches. The occasional one, sure, go keep the clients happy, but not all the time. So, we're actually fairly similar to direct life insurers. We've got all the same sorts of functions within our team and our structure. Obviously, pricing, from an actuarial perspective, quite similar, especially on the group side. You know, get a quote in, look at the data, clean it up, go through loss ratios, go through historical experience, how's that going to change going forward, is there trending deterioration in there, all that sort of thing, which is really quite similar to what you do on the insurance side. On the retail side, probably a little bit different in that, you know, we don't sort of own the portfolio and book of business. We're not as concerned with how it compares to, you know, an insurer's competitors, how it sort of stands out in the market. So we're not doing as much work on that side, but it's really around, you know, profit testing, do the rates sort of sit where they should sit, is there cross subsidies in the book, and looking at what sorts of reinsurance commissions we can offer to a client on the retail side. Business development, obviously have one of those teams, that's my area at SCORE. So instead of, you know, as an insurer would go and talk to trustees, have advisors who are selling their retail business, our marketing and business development is with insurers. It's around helping them out through that pricing process and explaining to our insurers why SCORE in this case or any other reinsurer would be a good fit for them. We obviously have an appointed actuary and evaluation team. They're probably in a little bit of a different position from a reinsurance perspective. You know, they get data from all sorts of different clients. It looks quite different, and they've got to work through that process of tidying it up. They don't actually own that data either. We've got a finance and administration function, as an insurer would. Again, similar sorts of things, looking after, you know, balance sheets, P&L statements, going through the accounting functions, all things you have to have to run a company. Claims team, again, we've got a claims team just as an insurer has. We probably do a little bit less of the day-to-day referral work than an insurer would do, going through the actual claims cases. But we do a bit more on the training side and the audit side, providing extra services to the insurers. And then again, similar thing on the underwriting side to claims, in that we do see some underwriting referrals, the ones above our clients' automatic or delegated authorities. But, you know, we also provide extra services, provide advice for the trickier cases, look to do audits, provide support around the medical aspects of underwriting, review whether they want to change their underwriting, some non-medical limits and financial limits and whatnot. So some of the, I guess, key key differences at a reinsurer as compared to the insurer is the treaty. The treaty is obviously the contract that is written between an insurer and a reinsurer. It goes through a whole lot of different aspects. It covers off the reinsurance premiums, whether any reinsurance commissions payable. It covers off claims and underwriting authorities. It covers off, you know, in the worst case scenario, what might happen if something goes wrong, if the insurer and reinsurer disagree on something. What's the process? What happens? Do you go through arbitration? Who gets involved? It covers off rights to terminate the treaty, again, in the worst case scenario, or if the insurer simply wants to retender their book of business, how does that treaty end? Obviously, a very important document. And more so these days as well, some of the difficulties out there in the market. And, you know, if everything goes well, you shouldn't have to rely on the clauses in the treaty, but that's not always the case. Global R&D functions are something that, with all the local reinsurers here, being part of a global reinsurer, they have those insights and access to various functions. They provide details of what's happening in product development elsewhere. A lot of the functions have quite technical academics involved who do a lot of data crunching, looking at mortality rates, morbidity rates, how they vary in different locations, why they vary, what trends are going on, what's happening with life expectancy, what's happening in the medical profession as, you know, screening for various cancers sort of becomes more prevalent and it's happening more often. How does that change our trauma rates, for example? There are some of the less day-to-day functions, but when you've got particular teams set up to look at these R&D, you can add some really valuable insights. As a reinsurer, you know, we get access to those. We can also send off various bits of information from the Australian market to these teams to be reviewed, and we can share that back with our insurance clients. Data, as I sort of mentioned earlier, it's probably more challenging being a reinsurer than an insurer. We don't own the data ourselves. We don't necessarily get all the fields that we'd like to have in there. As I'm on the marketing side, I'm always getting our pricing team asking for extra data and more data and where are these fields and those fields. So it can be a challenge. And from a valuation perspective as well, we don't necessarily get the data when we want it. We might have to wait between quarters to get it. And it all looks different as well. So we're forever trying to merge it all into the one database and make sense of it all. But on the same side, having access to all that data, potentially from different clients over time, gives you a lot of data and can really add value in terms of analysing that experience. You know, as actuaries, we all love more and more data as well, so we can actually review that, delve into different aspects, understand what's happening in the market, hopefully, and also share that with our clients. Market overview, this is something that I quite like about being at a reinsurer, in that you're not just dealing with the one product, you're not just dealing with the one set of systems, the one client and their strategy. You get a really good overview of what's actually happening out there. You know, most reinsurers have a handful of key clients, key insurers out there, and they all operate differently. And it's really good to get that understanding of how that works. Also from the product perspective, all the retail products, for example, are slightly different. You get to understand how they differ, who's doing what's changing over time, and get a really good, you know, overall level view of the market. At the same time, you probably don't understand any particular product as well as anyone an insurer would. That's just one of the drawbacks of it. You're not going to know as much around the distribution channel and how products are actually sold as people would at an insurer either. So it's a different view of things. The risk versus sales focus is something that you're probably perhaps not aware of being at an insurer. That might actually differ at a reinsurer. With the reinsurer often taking some of those quite high sums insured, some of the riskier aspects of a book of business, they do have a different view of the risk. Things may impact the reinsurer sooner than they might the insurer. And you know, at a reinsurer, typically your business development functions, your marketing functions aren't quite as strong in pushing to get commercial discounts and things through that might be an insurer. So you get a lot more actuaries at a reinsurer. Don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but there is a bit more of a risk focus at a reinsurer, given we're dealing with those higher, scarier, unusual risks. And clients. Clients, obviously, why reinsurers are here, as why the insurers are here. The way we deal with our clients is a little bit different in that a lot of people we talk to at insurance companies are actuaries. It helps in that you can have that conversation on a risk basis without having to get into the sales side of things. But, you know, it's also really about making sure we're ongoing servicing our clients, making sure that our underwriting claims are being, the cases are being turned around in appropriate timeframes, making sure we're there to support them, and the occasional long lunch as well. So this is sort of my view of what I kind of think reinsurance is actually like. It's a bit of a mix of working as a life insurer. You still do all your normal pricing, valuation sorts of work. You still got to, you know, chase the new business at times. You still got to make sure that business remains profitable. You still, at the end of the day, have a balance sheet and P&L and targets you've got to try and hit. On the other hand, it's a bit like consulting as well, in that the client aspect of it really means that we've got to provide good services to our clients and, you know, get into some quite difficult conversations sometimes around client negotiations. But at the same time, you know, it's not such a short-term view as you might sometimes get in consulting, where, you know, you do a piece of work, you hand it over, and then you go away, you don't have to worry about it too much. In reinsurance, if you do that, you're going to lose money. I'm lucky in that I've worked in consulting and reinsurance so far, so I understand those two aspects very well, and you never know, maybe one day I'll move over to insurance. So this sort of goes through, at a very high level, the business process that happens at a reinsurer. And this is sort of focusing on what happens in a new business, from, you know, developing those opportunities to pricing them to then going through and making sure that they remain profitable. So I've sort of touched on some of this before already, but the initial marketing and BD side is actually really important for a reinsurer. You know, coming from SCORE, for example, where we are a fairly new reinsurer to the market, we do have to go out there and do some marketing. Let people know who we are. Let people know that we're out here and we've got, you know, opportunities and we're interested in looking at new business. So they know what sorts of new business we're looking at as well. That's really around talking closely to our clients, understanding their strategy as well. Everyone's different. Everyone's looking at different segments of the market. Some are more interested in industry funds, some in corporates. It's around understanding that, around understanding the insurers, what their growth targets are like, how they want to interact with reinsurers, and trying to find if there's a bit of an alignment there on strategy. So there is a lot of going out there and networking with people and finding out which opportunities could be a good fit for both. If we find an opportunity that could be a good fit for both, then you get on to the tender process. And this is a lot, as we've already discussed, around, you know, the pricing side of things, going through product development, you know, making sure it actually does fit within our risk appetite. You know, a lot of the time, especially at the moment, things are changing quite rapidly. You know, you want to make sure that from an economic perspective, the particular industry you're talking about is quite safe and secure. You want to make sure from a product side of things that it's all quite sound, you're not open to any selection or anything. So we go through all that process internally and then have discussions with our clients around it as well. It's also around trying to make sure that what we're actually developing, say in the group space, actually meets the end members' needs. Making sure they've got sufficient levels of cover, making sure there aren't cross subsidies in there, so some members are paying more than they should compared to the others. And there's the fun part, the client negotiation side of things, where, you know, particularly in my job in BD, you might have our price being quite widely different to our insurer's price, and trying to find out why they're different, has someone made a mistake, has someone taken a different view of things to the other, and trying to, if we can, get them close together, but then realising it doesn't always happen as well. And then presentations to the client form a part of that too. Implementation side of things, obviously we've got the treaties which we've already talked about. We need to agree with our clients what the bordereau and the data they're going to send us is going to look like. Again, everyone's got different systems, so it's about making sure that we get what we need. And the treaties can be quite prescriptive in terms of detailing the actual data fields that we need to get. Again, making sure it's something that's workable for both parties. And the claims underwriting side, we've sort of talked through the authorities that we might provide an insurer and how we sort of negotiate and discuss where those authorities might be. And it depends on a variety of things. It depends on, you know, from a workplace perspective, how many claims cases do we want to be seeing versus the insurer. It depends on their own internal processes, how good they are at claims management, for example, as well. So it's always interesting discussions. And the in-force management side, you know, really being very important, particularly at the moment. You know, we've all seen if you don't actually manage your in-force closely, it can, you know, sort of derail itself. Experience moves from where you expected it to be, doesn't end up being as you priced, trends change, policy holders' behaviour changes, overall claims rates just change, you've got to monitor that. So we do try to, as a reinsurer, obviously work closely with our insurers to actually review that experience and feedback it back to the clients and really work together to make sure both the insurer and reinsurer actually understand the portfolio of business and how it's performing. Obviously got ongoing claims and underwriting cases that go on, the training we've already talked to, as is the global insights and, you know, just the general client relationship management and making sure our clients, the insurers, are happy with us and are providing the services we promised to provide to them. So let's finish off by thinking about what's next in reinsurance. I sort of opened up by saying, you know, the Australian market is quite developed from a reinsurance perspective, and from an insurance perspective as well. But what's next? You know, longevity, I think, is something that's going to be quite important for the Australian market. We're an aging population, we all know that. So we're very good at looking after what happens during the working cycle of someone's life. What happens after that? For a lot of us, superannuation won't be enough. So we're going to have to look at, you know, long-term care kinds of products that pay out if someone falls ill or injured or whatnot, can't take care of themselves when they're at that sort of plus 65 age group. Obviously, there are different definitions to what you might have for the younger ages, but it might provide an ongoing benefit for these people as they get older, need help take care of themselves, or just need to provide costs of medical expenses and whatnot. So a lot of the reinsurers do some work with longevity overseas. It's probably a bit easier overseas, and there's potentially more government support for it than we have in Australia at the moment. But there is experience in those areas overseas which may come to Australia in the near future. Big data is a pretty key word in the industry at the moment across both insurers and reinsurers. You know, we're all very much aware of the benefits we have from data, obviously the limitations that a lot of us have got in our day-to-day working lives around utilising that data. There are some companies overseas in particular who are doing a good job with actually understanding the data, putting it together, understanding more about how, you know, policyholders behave through that data, around who's more likely to buy insurance, and the reinsurers can play a role in that. Sort of linked to that is the predictive underwriting side of things. So again, we've been very good as, I mean, underwriting hasn't actually changed in the last 10, 20 years in the Australian market. You know, we look at someone's medical history, look at their family history, tend to check their financials and make sure that they're someone who we actually want to provide cover to. But on the other side of that, we can look into, driver's licence records, how much of a good risk actually are they? Looking into actual behaviour that they exhibit, even things as such as what time of day they do their banking, are they out on a Saturday night withdrawing money at 2 a.m. from some ATM near a club, probably not a good risk. This is obviously difficult in the Australian market at the moment with privacy regulations, but there are certainly some countries overseas, the US being one of them actually, that does do a lot of predictive underwriting. Digital solutions, again, something that hopefully the insurer and reinsurer can work together on going forwards. Again, probably the insurance space isn't particularly savvy in the digital area at the moment. With younger generations coming through, everyone wants things more instantaneous. You don't want to have to wait for 2 weeks for your underwriting application to be assessed. You want to be able to go on and, you know, on your phone, at a click of a button, see your banking details, your superannuation, your insurance cover as well. So there's some lots of opportunities there that hopefully the insurer and reinsurer can work through together. And the last one is just around those medical developments and R&D. You know, life's always changing. It's one of the great things about the industry we're in. Medical developments happen, populations change, obesity epidemics happen, probably not one of the good sides of it, but things are always changing. And so the more you can understand that and analyse that and you know, assess the risks involved, hopefully the better products we're going to have, the more detailed they are, the more they actually fit for people's needs, and the more sustainable they are from a pricing product perspective too. That's about the bulk of the presentation. So thank you. Q&A.
Thanks, Nicole, for a very comprehensive presentation. I think now we're going to have some Q&A. So if anyone has any questions, maybe you can raise your hand, and we have a roving mic so we can pick up the answers for the benefit of the people who aren't here.
Thank you for your presentation. Just a quick question. So what we saw with group markets 2 years ago with losses on TPD, and then what we saw last year with losses on retail disability portfolio, is mispricing common to reinsurers as well? And then what are reinsurers doing to manage that mispricing risk?
Good question. I think part of the issues that have happened, particularly with the group market, was around reinsurers not being as disciplined perhaps they should have been. You know, there have been a lot of losses, but it was driven by a very competitive market at the time as well. And also the fact that we weren't really reviewing our experience well enough. We sort of set a price and forgot to review the experience and reassess that over time. Similarly on the retail side as well with the IP, that it's really been around not managing that experience closely enough. I think everyone's come through that cycle and has learnt something from it. You know, there always will be mispricing risks, however, where actuaries, we price on a best estimate or some version of a best estimate. We're not always going to get it right. But I think it's really around the monitoring aspect of it and the diversification of it as well. You know, you put all your eggs in one basket, take one big industry fund, you are at risk of, you know, losing money on that particular one, but take shares of a few different funds, for example. I hope they won't all go wrong at once.
While people are thinking of their next question, I'll ask one. Nicole, what do you see as the biggest challenges for reinsurers over the next 5 years in the Australian market?
I think it comes back a lot to that. Around on the group side, making sure we have a sustainable product offering. Obviously, what's happened with the pricing increases is not good for anyone. The trustees and the members don't want this uncertainty, don't want to have 50% price increases going through. So we need to make sure that we avoid that going on. We need to make sure that we still have a product that's of relevance and of use to members, that we're not charging exorbitant amounts for this reinsurance cover. Obviously, with the insurance sitting within super in a lot of these cases, we don't want to be eroding retirement benefits. So it's around making sure that we've got, you know, a sustainable product and that we're going to have that going forward a number of years. And I think it is really around making sure we do stay disciplined, making sure we do review our experience. A lot has changed over time. And you know, it's really important to make sure that we're monitoring that and picking it up quickly as well. We're not perfect, we make mistakes, let's just try and make sure we fix those.
Any other questions for Nicole?
So the profitability chart So the profitability for insurers, that's reported net of reinsurance. And the profitability for reinsurers, that is reported gross of retrocession arrangements. Is that right? Is there a specific reason for that?
I'll have to ask APRA those questions. yeah, you're right, the reinsurer ones are gross of any retrocession support. I think the insurer ones are actually net of reinsurance, so it takes all that out. So as it just goes to show, I mean, from a reinsurer's point of view, you know, what we retrocession, especially to our own head offices, is quite important, and we sort of take that into account in our own results as well. Whereas an insurer tends to look at things on more of a net basis.
Well, thank you for the presentation. My background is from general insurance, so that's kind of where my experience is. So I was really fascinated to hear about the similarities in life. But one of the things that I've seen in general insurance and the reinsurance space is alternative capital coming through. So cat bonds being produced for the high-risk areas like Florida. But is there something similar coming through in life insurance, reinsurance? Are there any kind of alternative companies that are trying to get into the space that's typically held by the reinsurers?
Possibly not so much alternate companies coming in, like non-reinsurers, but we are certainly seeing a bit more activity from some of the overseas reinsurers in the Australian market, partly driven by some of the capacity that had sort of dried up and just the size of the Australian market as well. It's obviously attractive. I guess from the life insurance doesn't tend to be as volatile as general insurance. We don't get the big hurricane storms, billion-dollar losses from some of these catastrophes that actually happen. From a life perspective, they tend to be smaller, and they tend to be more sort of trends that happen and trends that emerge over time. So from that perspective, I don't think we see as much of the cat sort of cover you see in the general space.
Hi, Brett Pickett. To what extent have reinsurers got capacity or interest to do stop-loss reinsurance? For instance, take X percent of all claims above Y percent of premium, as opposed to taking X percent of all best estimates and Y percent after X percent of premiums.
Probably of interest is why the insurer is asking us to take that. I guess if the insurers aren't particularly interested in a particular risk, it's probably sort of similar to the reinsurers. They're quite unusual and quite high risk, and lots of downside to those sorts of risks. I guess the opportunity for those is more around diversifying on a global perspective. So I guess a lot of the local life insurers wouldn't want, well, local life reinsurers wouldn't necessarily want that on their own books, but there may be chances to take it offshore to other more diversified books.
We might be thinking about it because it has the same cash flow profile, but you might have capital benefits.
Anyone else with burning questions on reinsurance? Okay, I might wrap up then for today. Thanks, let's thank Nicole again for her presentation.